This faggoty podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 60,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/gayshow.
I am Kevin Aviance. No, Johnny, I ain't got your money. Cause you know the thing, she's down bitching for the bitch, honey. Cause I'm just, you know, we gay, she's gay pimping. And she's gay pimping on this damn podcast. And that means I'm her bitch. But no, I ain't got your money, bitch. This is Kevin Aviance, honey. Hello. What's going on, girl?
Get ready, my little gay babies. Cause it's time for Gay Pimping with Johnny McGovern.
Like a daisy, feeling like a rose,
feeling like an orchid.
Gay Pimpin' with Johnny McGovern,
featuring Linda James and Straight Boy Martine.
All right, it's Kevin Aviance Day,
it's Kevin
everybody.
Aviance Day!
Yeah,
you're kids, you're in for such a great show because it's Kevin Aviance Day. Now, first of all, Kevin Aviance, let's just give him a little intro. He's a club legend.
He's a genius.
You know, he has a ton of hits. He has Cunty, Dendada, Give It Up, Alive, Rhythm Is My Bitch. I mean, but
his new hit, Strut.
Which he's told us we can play today on the show. Lucky us.
What a treat for you.
You kids are so fucking lucky because this is my new favorite Kevin Aviance song, and you're going to live for it. Now, Kevin Aviance Martine is of a big, you know, club star as it is, but he just started off when I first started seeing him. And let me tell you, Kevin Aviance has inspired me in ways that I can't explain. Right, Linda? You too?
Me too. Absolutely.
I mean, Kevin, when you see Kevin Aviance just do a lip sync show alone,
it'll change your life.
There have been shows, there were just so many great ones. One of my favorites, there was a 45-minute show he did once at Sound Factory when it was like the last Junior Vasquez. This is just recently. Uh-huh. This is like a year and a half ago. He started off doing Milkshake, and he did it with this wig on.
Oh, you've told me about this. This is genius.
Chewing gum like he was really bored. And then he went into like, what else did he do? Like some kind of
Did he do Vanessa Carlton that night? Was that
That was later. We'll get to the Vanessa Carlton show, you guys. Because, see, he started off with Milkshake. He went into a bunch of other hits. He did Set It Off by Monica, this big remix of this. Now, it's hard to explain. Like, Kevin Aviance lip-syncing a song is like, imagine your local drag queen lip-syncing a song, okay? Then imagine someone 9 million times better. When Kevin Aviance lip-syncs something, he becomes that character. It's just so fucking great. So anyway, the show, he did like 3 or 4 songs, and then he tries to leave. And so Junior, this is the fun thing about going to a Junior Vasquez when Kevin Aviance performs, is they have this sort of love-hate, push-pull relationship. Junior kept playing songs that he knew Kevin could not perform. So Kevin would be trying to like go up the middle staircase to leave the stage, and then Junior would play another song, and he'd be like, and you could see him like shaking the fist like Junior, and then he would come back again, and it happened like 3 or 4 times. At one point, Kevin just sort of kneeled on the stairs during the beat and was like,
in pain,
can I even do it another
can
one
I
I'm gonna it? Do another
oh,
one
I can't escape the rhythm.
It's just so good. And then other times, there have been Junior parties with Kevin there where the lights are up. It's like Junior's playing the end. You know, usually a Junior party, like the old day ones, were like 10 hours long, 15 hours long. And then it would be sort of like, it would get lighter toward the end. And then he would sort of finish up with something happy. And then the lights would come up and he'd play some pop song that, you know, you can't dance to like crazy and like you're supposed to leave. So on one of these parties, he does that, the happy music, and then the lights come up, and he starts playing Vanessa Carlton, 1,000 Miles. Okay, and Kevin fucking Aviance just gets up there in the middle of the floor, lights up, and starts doing the fucking Vanessa Carlton song, playing like the air piano. You have not ever seen anything more magical than Kevin Aviance fucking doing Vanessa Carlton and killing it. and like making you amazing. Be like, rock, Vanessa Carlton is so cunty. That's something that's never been said before.
Vanessa Carlton, you're so cunt.
So we're going to get a lot of stuff from Kevin today that I'm very excited about. Lots of things I want to know. I mean, I know Kevin. We hang out with him. We do songs with him. But, you know, there's a lot of, you never get to sit down and be like, tell me, what was the inspiration behind cunty? Or like,
this is
what
really
was the first time you did this? Like, how did you, you know, I want to know all that shit. So you're going to get the inside dirt.
It's a big get for you, Johnny McGovern.
It is, because, you know, it's pretty much the number one celebrity in the world in my book.
In the world.
Really, I would be happy with some Kevin Avion's paparazzi photos. I'd like to see those.
Oh, those would be so good.
Because the different looks he'll be pumping, they'll be so glamorous. His day looks so fun.
Oh, when he gets in fights with people at McDonald's and shit.
Take that, Ashley Simpson. Oh, that is great shit. So we got Kevin Avion's here, and we have a new addition to our show. We are now so fancy.
And so fancy.
Rich. And such a huge mega success.
We're style icons.
We're style icons.
People are shaving off their mohawks when they hear our show.
Yeah, we're changing everything.
We're changing lives here.
Take that, Oprah.
Take that.
Take that, Oprah. Faggots just got saved from mohawks.
Oprah may be ridding the world of child molesters, but we are facing mohawks head on.
Get out of here, mohawk. Get thee behind me.
That's good. Well, we're so rich and fancy now that I've decided to take one of my favorite and personal DJs, DJ Techshore, and put his ass here every week and make him play all the shit that we want him to play.
Yeah!
So say hello, Techshore.
Hey, guys. How are you? What's going on? Hey, Linda James.
What's up?
Hey, Johnny.
Yes,
hey, Internet. Hey, Martine.
So Techshore's going to be here. He's going to be spinning some stuff. And, you know, maybe in the coming weeks, we're going to slip in a little best of NYC nightlife music for you. So all you kids at home are like, what are they playing? What are all the hot DJs playing in New York City?
Just listen to this show.
And we're gonna probably do it. I thought about next week. You want to do that?
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely going to bring in some hot hip-hop, you know, some even, you know, going as far as like house and electro for everyone to hear what's,
mix
you know,
it
hear,
all
what,
up, yeah.
hear what the hottest shit is, spin some cool tracks that maybe people haven't heard before.
Yeah, well, you know, the nice thing about the way Techshore plays is that it's a lot of hits, but it's also a lot of hits that you didn't know were hits necessarily or that you forgot were a hit. It's good.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. All right, now it's time for big news. It's the
awkward break in the show where I come from the future to give you a commercial about the sponsor of our show. What's up, y'all? Yes, I know it's funky when I break in from the future to give you a little commercial, but that is how we keep the show alive, cutie. I'm here to tell you that this podcast is brought to you by the lovely and glamorous people at Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 60,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature. I mean, and mostly the kind I listen to is spooky, but they have all sorts of stuff, including gay and lesbian, mysteries and thrillers, regular fiction, self-help. They have everything up on the Audible. And there's audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. And for listeners of this gay-ass show, Audible is offering a free audiobook. That's right, because they want you to try out Audible. Let me tell you, you should, because y'all, Audible is my favorite. I am an Audible junkie. I am listening to several books right now. Right now, I'm listening to Stephen King's It's a new short story from Stephen King. It's about a Kindle that comes from the future, and this person reads it, and all this, he sees all the scary stuff that happened on the Kindle in the future, and he tries to change the future because, I can't even get into it to tell you what's going on in this spooky Stephen King story, but it's good, and it's not very expensive. If you like dirty, inappropriate stuff, they also have Shameful Penthouse Letters audio version. Yes, erotic audiobook. So you could get anything. So for a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/gayshow. That's audiblepodcast.com/gayshow. All right. And now back to your regularly scheduled faggoty fun. Hit that music.
Remember that episode of Good Times when Janet Jackson got caught stealing? Watch me serve. Watch me serve. Watch me serve.
And now the New York City Nightlife Report with Johnny McGovern and Linda James.
New York City. The
New York City!
Full of nightlife extravaganzas every week. We work in nightlife, so it takes a lot to really get us too excited about something. But this week, let me tell you, I was excited.
This was a good
because
week.
I was at my party on Wednesday, which is called Spunked. It's at Splash with Daniel Nardiccio, another large promoter in New York City, where we have naked shower shows every week. That's always very amusing. But anyway, I was there. I got to work. I'm having like 5 drinks, which I like to do to put me in a real good mood right away.
This ain't no office job.
It's not an office
job.
Just
get to work. No. Like, what should I start with? Filing the forms, collating the paper? No, five drinks.
Get me nice and loose and feeling good to do my Johnny McGovern job, which is just to really hang out and be sassy.
Be Johnny McGovern.
And make sure those dudes public. Are nude. So I'm getting my first of 5 drinks, and I see, like, the shadow of this person voguing, right? They're voguing, or like sort of, there's this big video screen, and I see these arms waving, and then I see all these positions happening, and I'm like, wait, yeah, that's good. No, wait, is that, what,
who,
could that,
is that wait,
be,
who, what?
I was like, I think that's Willie Ninja! And I was like, Willie Ninja! And I was like, oh my God, this night just got even better. So I rush over, past, through everything. I'm pushing people out of the way. I'm like, excuse me, Willie Ninja, that's Willie Ninja. So I go over and I'm peeking him. And I'm like, holy shit, it is Willie Ninja. And so Willie Ninja was there. I talked to him, said hi, gave him a couple drink tickets. But Willie Ninja, let me tell you, didn't just come to hang out at the club. Willie Ninja was there to motherfucking
turn it
and turn the shit. Willie Ninja, like
the master.
Okay, Willie Ninja,
headmaster.
If you've seen Paris is Burning, you have a little bit of an inkling of what Willie Ninja has done and why he's so amazing. But he was from the original, one of the original. He started the house. He's the father of the mother of the house of Ninja. He pretty much took voguing from, you know, a ballroom thing to an international thing. You know, he said in Paris is Burning, I want to take this and I want to go to Paris and make it burn. And what did Willie Ninja
do? It's so inspiring. He made Paris burn.
He was on runway designers, people like fashion designers had him on the runways and had them in big fashion shows. And he was like, he did a song with Malcolm McLaren called Deep in Vogue. He became an international superstar from pretty much just nothing. Out of nothing.
Raw talent.
He just fucking did it.
He believed in his shit so much and he really did bring it.
And he's a genius. When you look at the way he moves and stuff, it's just really amazing.
You've never seen anyone move like him before.
Yeah, I mean, he does just so many amazing things. If you don't know who Willie Ninja is, you need to look up online.
You need to go out right now and buy a copy of Paris is Burning is what you need to do.
If you haven't rented Paris is Burning and watched it like 9 or 10 times, you're not even gay yet. Mm-hmm. Okay? There's a lot of work to do. Martine's at least seen it once,
yeah,
right?
I've seen it twice now.
Twice.
Two times.
And that's, you know, he's a straight guy.
And I've never touched another wiener, and I've seen it twice.
You've seen it twice.
Not once.
But you know what? With Paris is Burning, is when I first saw Paris is Burning in high school, or not in high school. I saw it like my freshman year of college. And that was when last year of high school, I was loving RuPaul from that whole thing. So I saw Paris is Burning, and I was like, wait a minute. RuPaul didn't invent the term supermodel of the world, or like all any of that shit that he talks about.
Nothing.
Like the evolution of that stuff. I mean, he took it and popularized
it. It's very deep New York City gay
culture. New York City gay shit that we invented that goes then around the world and eventually gets watered down so people don't understand that we invented that shit. So anyway, back to Willie Ninja. He wasn't going to just sit at the bar. Willie Ninja fucking was voguing on the floor for like 2 fucking hours. And when I talked to one of the bartenders, I was like, that's Willie Ninja. And they're like, yeah, he's been here for 2 hours voguing. So Willie Ninja
that's genius.
I literally just pulled up a chair, had a drink, and I was like, I don't have time to talk to anyone right now because all I want to do is watch this show, which is a legendary show, pretty much just for me and the people at the
club. Johnny McGovern sitting there at the bar screaming, clear the floor!
I literally was saying clear the floor because there was some other patron there who was some old kind of fat man. And he kept wanting to be like, I want to dance on the floor.
His friend
kept pushing him back, and there was actually, Willie Ninja was with another little kid in his house, Javier Ninja, and they were doing like the thing where they dropped down and pose, and it was just fucking amazing. And then, like, of course, that gives license to every busted queen in the club to, like, then do their imitation.
I can do that, too.
So there was some shirtless, white, fat homo, like, voguing.
Doing Madonna-style
bad voguing.
Not the real thing,
and I literally was like, clear the floor! If your name's not Ninja, clear the floor! Oh, but let me tell you, that really brightened up my fucking day.
That's like a lovely, gay, magical thing to happen.
It is. It's like, this is one of those moments when I'm like, this is why
I
love
a gay penny.
New York City. Because Willie Ninja might just be at Splash doing a 2-hour voguing show for your enjoyment for no money, for nothing, just because he's cool. God, I love him. Willie Ninja. So that made my day. And I talked to Willie Ninja. And he was like, yes, I'll be on your show, girl. Give me a call. So he's coming. He is coming for sure. It's not just an empty promise.
So what else happened this week, Johnny?
What else happened this week? There was a very important event. And of course, it has something to do with me, Johnny McGovern.
Surprise, surprise. Johnny McGovern wants to talk about Johnny McGovern.
What a shock. But you know what? We do so much cool shit. We just got to talk about it. It's been a legendary week because, okay, we're getting Kevin Aviance today, right?
Yeah.
Well, I saw
it's
Willie
Kevin
Ninja.
Aviance
Kevin
Day!
Aviance Day!
Hey, Kevin.
So anyway, we're getting caught up Kevin Aviance today. On Wednesday, I saw Willie Ninja at Splash just voguing for hours. And on Sunday, for Johnny McGovern Presents at Spirit, we debuted my new track, produced by Adam Joseph, called...
Oh, do you know what we did, though? We turned out your new track.
Yes, you really did fucking turn it out. We did. It's called We Like to Freak, and it has a rap from Mother Flawless Sabrina. Now, take a lesson, kids. Check on queenmother.com if
Time
you don't know about any drag queens or anybody that we talk about on here that you don't know. Check that website because it's serious.
We're not
kidding
around. We can't just talk about people who are like kind of famous on one block of New York City.
Mother Flawless Sabrina is a New York City legend.
Yes. And you know, I know we talk about legendary here a lot, but it's only because we talk about legendary people all the time to give them the respect that they deserve.
The spotlight. The podcasting spotlight that they deserve.
Just in future reference from now on, if you don't know who I'm talking about, go to either queenmother.com or House of Diabolique, if that's still going. And that is another great voguing and legendary nightclub information source to check, okay? So anyway, Mother Flawless Sabrina, who is just a legend. She's a
peach.
She's quite old, but still fucking glamorous. You go over to her house, she has a Picasso, and she used to hang out with Andy Warhol. There was a documentary made about her in the 60s, mind you, okay, when gay didn't exist, pretty much. We were still just homosexuals.
When you had to go to a bar that had a watch outside to see if the cops were coming because you were gay.
Yeah, because you could get arrested.
And they would arrest you for
when that was happening. When that environment was happening, Flawless Sabrina was so fucking cool and so amazing that they made a documentary about her. Flawless Sabrina, also by the way, told a very amazing story about she was in her apartment one day with Truman Capote and Halston. Okay, Truman Capote and Halston, just up in her apartment, and she was like, "Yeah, I was sitting there with Truman Capote and Halston." She doesn't. I'm not doing a Flawless Sabrina impression or anything.
No.
But I was sitting there with them, and Halston was like, "Oh God!" He comes in with this big roll of fabric, some kind of funky fabric, and he's like, "Jesus Christ, I don't know what to do with this shit. They're paying me all this money, and I have to come up with something good to do with this weird soft fabric. I don't know what the hell to do." And Truman Capote looks at it and goes, "Why don't you call it Ultra Suede?"
Schwerk, bitch.
And there you go. Ultra Suede was invented Mother Flawless Sabrina.
That's the kind of story that you get if you talk to or hang out with Mother Flawless Sabrina. She's like a gem of New York City like folklore and legend, and because she witnessed it all. She was at the factory with Andy Warhol. He actually funded the film The Queen to get made.
She's a superstar genius.
She's real shit.
For my new song on my new Gays Gone Wild album, which is coming out pretty soon.
We're
going to be doing a countdown to when it comes out because it's really fucking good, kids. Better than anything I've ever done. Anyway, we did a track with her where I wrote her a little rap called that goes like, "Why are you kids so nasty? Acting all so trashy. Why can't you be classy like Miss Shirley Bassey?
Why are you kids so nasty?
We're good.
And it's just amazing. So we did the show for that, which was where we all wore painted gold head to toe.
With gold dust.
Gold dust. Our friends from Man of the Arts painted us all up. And then Davey Makeout, who's our great designer friend, who makes most of the things I wear in shows and that the girls wear in all their shows, he made a bunch of gold, like, he made me a gold track jacket that was just so amazing.
So beautiful.
He made these gold bikinis for Linda and Erica. He made these gold sexy little shorts for the boys. And we turned that show out. And Flawless Sabrina started off like she was a grumpy old lady. And then in the middle, in a house coat and huge curlers. And then she comes back in the middle and she rips off the house coat and she has a gold dress that Davey Makeout made underneath.
She's a freak too.
And she's a freak too. And she does her rap and just goes, it was a great and fun show.
It was a lot of fun.
Kids, if you're in New York City on a Sunday ever, you need to check it out. We do brand new shows every weekend there. Always Attracted, I've either written or produced or am in or something with my whole cast of characters. All the fabulous ladies and menses of Johnny McGovern appear there every weekend.
Why don't you come,
Martine? I have to work on Monday.
Sadly, Martine has to watch the videos.
Yeah, I just see the
videos. You could see me if you come wearing this scandalous thing.
Yes, you'll be. If you want to see Linda James at in her peak, you'll come to Spirit. She's looking fucking good. Looking cute. Hey, kids.
Hey, Johnny.
You want to help your daddy, Johnny McGovern, out?
Yeah.
Well, why don't you go to gaypimp.com and fill out my survey?
Okay.
You know why we do that?
No.
Well, people who want to sponsor the show want to know who you are. And to make sure that our show keeps going, we need to tell them.
What, Queen?
Are they going to spam us?
No way.
Yay!
We're here, we're queer. Jay and Bradshaw.
Jay and Bradshaw.
Jay and Bradshaw.
Jay and Bradshaw.
Hey, Jay, honey, what's going on?
Hi, guys. How's it going?
You know, you might have noticed that last week. The last week, the song was Bradshaw and Jay. Bradshaw and Jay. But Jay made an important note, and he said, you know, he took us aside.
It's me, Jay Star. I should really be Jay and Bradshaw.
I did say that.
You did.
But you know what? It's true.
It's true. It's true. You're
it's not Jay Star and Bradshaw.
You are a second banana to Jay Star, Bradshaw.
So Bradshaw is going to, I want you to move closer to the mic because you are going to be talking also today, even though you're the second banana, because I heard you guys got into a fight at the movie and I want to hear all about it.
It was a huge fight.
All right. Well, let's hear about the movie.
What movie did you see, Jay?
Yeah. Match Point.
Match Point. That's a new Woody Allen movie?
Right.
And that's about what? Tennis?
It's a tennis movie.
No, it's not. See, he fell asleep, so he doesn't know.
So that's what the fight was about, huh?
Well, we know what the Bradshaw review of the movie is. Five wieners down.
I didn't approve.
So what was it about, Jack?
Yeah, give me a plot synopsis, because I haven't seen it.
This guy, I don't know. There's two couples, and they're both getting married.
One's Jonathan Rhys Meyers, right?
Who's very hot.
Who's really hot.
That's the only reason
and Scarlett
Johansson's
the other one.
Right. And she's girlfriend. An American girl in the UK, I think.
Okay.
And I got so pissed off that I stopped paying attention to the movie.
Oh. Yeah. Why'd you get pissed off?
Okay, so so anyway, they get into love fights and things. That's
yeah,
the movie.
He's cheating on the girl, and then she finds out, and then... I can't tell you.
Hetero.
Oh no, she's the girl that he's cheating with.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, so basically, straight people, la la boo boo loo loo boo 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 boo, murder, and there's a murder or something,
and she gets pregnant.
No, there's murder.
There's murder in it.
There's murder. It's a bit of a mystery. I've read. I don't know, but they say with a mysterious. This is mysterious.
There's a little twist. Yeah.
There's twists. Okay, Linda, don't give me that look.
All right, sorry.
Fucking pinch your titties, your voluptuous titties, if you're not careful, Linda. Want to tune in Tokyo?
Stop.
Linda station?
No.
Which station gets me?
Purple Nurple.
Okay, so what now?
Anyway,
you guys got
I'm
into
lost.
So you sexy guys got into a fight. Why? What happened? Actually, let's do it in two ways. Okay, first we're gonna hear Jay's side of the story with no talking from Bradshaw, and then we're gonna hear Bradshaw's side of the story.
It's very Judge
with no
Judy
talking from Jay.
I was just thinking that it's very Judge Judy
because I don't want it to get
the
all jumbled.
Jay Star claims that his boyfriend Bradshaw fell asleep during Match Point, the new Woody Allen picture.
Okay, so Judge John McGovern will now hear the cases. Co-defendant Jay Star steps up to the bench.
I don't know. What happened was that was Monday night, and he usually sleeps with me every night. Mm-hmm. But on Sunday night, he went home to Jersey, so he didn't sleep with me that night. So I'm watching this movie and he's like totally asleep.
Out of it.
Totally out of it.
You're watching a movie about
and
people cheating.
And
on
the guy's cheating on the girl. And I was like, what was he doing all night? How come he's so tired?
The plot thickens. J-Star doesn't get dick for one night.
Exactly.
And then he's like, he's cheating on me.
Who was he fucking? Why is he so tired?
I noticed last night when he slept with me, he didn't donkey punch me at the end.
Where's the donkey punch? So he fell asleep in the movie and you were mad about that. Maybe he was cheating on you with, who's hotter than you. Nobody.
Exactly. Nobody.
So that's it. That's the end of your story.
So wait, you brought it up. You confronted him, right?
I tried to wake him up and he wouldn't wake up. So I was like, if you don't wake up, I'm going to leave the theater.
Wow.
And then he woke up.
And did you enjoy the rest of
the movie? And then I asked him and he was like, no, I was home. I couldn't sleep. I'm just used to being up late and I'm tired. And I was like, no, you're fucking someone. You're lying.
Wow.
You
know, I guess. So jealous, J-Star.
Well, Jay, your case is bleak. Bradshaw, what's your side of the story?
Yeah, you gotta hear this. The movie was boring, right? I thought it was a boring tennis movie.
I didn't see him naked.
J-Star, you're not allowed to talk. Not allowed to talk.
Silence in the court.
Thank you. That's my job, Martin.
The hot guy in the movie was not naked within the first 30 minutes, so I got bored and, you know, figured he'd wake me up if, you know, I was showing his ass or there was a sex scene.
Or if you were cheating on him.
But no, he lets me sleep. He just lets me sleep. And then, you know, and then he wakes me up and he's like, I'm leaving if you don't wake up. And I was like, whoa, sorry. I didn't know.
Objection.
Objection.
And so I stayed up and I watched the, you know, rest of the fucking movie and fine. And then I didn't even know what the movie was about, but obviously it was about cheating because that's what I got accused of for the rest of the night.
Right, you're right about that.
And I did nothing. I did absolutely nothing.
I don't want to see my little munchkin Chase Star so angry and pointing the finger. It's very interesting.
He has no proof, no
But
evidence.
I got over it. It was just the movie made me a little
paranoid.
Yeah,
it sounds like the movie was very effective. It sounds like it planted the seed of cheating in J-Star's mind.
Thanks for nothing, Woody Allen, you bitch. You fucking ruined J-Star's night with your little cheating movie.
No
you
more cheating
art,
movies
Woody
for
Allen.
Me.
You and your art.
What
wreaking
the
havoc.
F. So I'm feeling your rating for this movie is quite low.
I actually like the movie. It's just... Go see it with a friend.
Don't see it with your significant other. Is that
no,
what you're saying?
I don't think so.
Too
That's
many mysterious
idea.
Thoughts in your head. Okay, well, on your wiener scale, J-Star, how many wieners out of five?
Three.
Three wieners.
That's been pretty much the regular. That's been the
Just
regular.
The regular.
The regular rating.
I always feel like whenever it's a straight movie like that, I always feel like they should just have an open relationship or just... It's hard for me to get into it. It's like, why? That's so stupid.
Wait, so you want the movie people to have an open relationship, but your boyfriend falls asleep at one little movie and, like, he's cheating!
Well,
Martine does bring up a good point up in... hold on. Yes, clack, clack of my gavel. The bailiff, Martine Beauchamp, brings up an interesting point.
No, all the guy had to do was be like, there's this really hot girl, I want to sleep with her, and then they could arrange
Is that okay, Scar
The
Joe?
Proper way.
Well, you know, maybe ScarJo's into that. Probably
three
not.
Ways, four three, G's,
four G's.
Star Magazine, ScarJo, Honey, I can't even say it. ScarJo, I love four G's. The confessions of a teenage movie star. Fuck you, Lindsay Lohan. I like four G's. I don't got a coke problem, but I'm into anonymous orgies with numerous partners, says Scarlett Johansson.
Zor's to say.
Those lips aren't just used for pouting.
I would probably really respect her more
if she was a sex addict. If Scarlett Johansson had a sex addiction.
I want to make a t-shirt that says I heart 4Gs.
Jared Leto would come out next and be like, it's true, I love 4Gs too. Hot new Hollywood trend. 4Gs.
Nicole, Paris, Lindsay.
Steve-O.
The 4G to hand off 4Gs. Steve in Paradise in Skinny Bony Paradise.
Bony Paradise. Oh, that dry man. Puntanta.
I didn't actually. over three people is a lot of work, but four people, that's just really two people having sex next to each other, unless you're doing some
unless
kind of
you're
long
doing
train.
Some sort of daisy chain.
And that's just like, you know, someone always ends up just being the one that's like, I'm just the one in the yeah, end sucking the dick. Who's going to do something to me? And then that guy, that fucking bitch in the middle, getting it from both ends is like Lucky Pierre. And you're like, oh, how much longer am I going to have to do this till I get fucked or stick my dick in somebody while they put up their balls in my mouth?
Oh, that's the problem with 4Gs.
That's the problem with 4Gs, ladies and gentlemen.
I am just extremely classy.
ScarJo recounts, the problem with 4Gs is sometimes you're not getting your dick sucked.
So it's three wieners up and a whole lot of 4Gs for Match Point.
We really went on a journey of comedy right
God,
there.
God, I'm totally lost here. Like, what just
ladies and gentlemen at home, play along with us.
Play along, kids.
There'll be transcripts up on the website. You yeah. can recreate
God
what
help
we just
you
did
because
here.
You're the one who's going to have to write out those bitches.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
All night.
Our listeners are quite, they're mostly homosexuals, so they're smart people.
You got to get into it, honey.
They already are. I guarantee you faggot teenagers can understand what we're talking about. Maybe my mom would be like, what?
What's a 4G?
In a lovely way.
Let's hope
she knows what a 4G is.
The mother of the house of pancakes?
Thanks, J-Star. Love you.
Thank you, J-Star.
Thank you, guys. See you later.
Sexy.
See you next week.
Bye,
kids,
if
I'll be here.
Kids, if you like J-Star's picture,
if you like J-Star's
wiener. Do you want fan mail, J-Star?
Yeah, we love that.
You want to email Jay Star, you want to talk back to him or ask him to do something with his wiener and take a photo so we can put it on the website, then email him at Jay Star. That's Jay Star, J-A-Y-S-T-A-R, at gaypimp.com. Right, Jay Star?
That's right.
So sexy.
Pictures.
Love you, honey.
Okay, bye,
I love
guys.
You.
Love you.
Bye. Jay and Bradshaw. Jay and Bradshaw. Jay and Bradshaw.
Why are you cheating on me?
I don't know.
Yes, it's time.
It's Kevin
Aviance time. We have in the studio, the Johnny McGovern Mega Studio, with us right now, my favorite number one superstar in the whole world, Kevin Aviance.
Hey, Kevin.
What's going on, girls?
Oh, Kevin. Now, earlier in the show, we gave you a huge introduction. We talked about your genius and all of your hits through the years. And I started to mention some of my favorite Kevin Aviance moments that I've experienced. And you know what you've done to me, old KA. You've turned your magic on me like a little magical club fairy. You inspired me all the time.
Now, I'm glad this is a podcast and they can't really see my face.
No, because she's like shaking her head at me like, John, I'm a governor. Why are you so
crazy?
Why are you so crazy for me? Why do you love me so much? And I just can't, I'll tell you why. Because one night, there's another Kevin Aviance moments of a lifetime. When I'm at Roxy, and Kevin used to perform at Roxy when Victor was spinning there, and they would do a show every week, the Cunties. And I think I got to see the tail end of your little performance crew, the Cunties, when it was still Josephine. And who was the other one?
Naomi Shambles.
There were shows that you guys would do, and this is, I'm going to come up to this stuff later because I have to ask you about it. But like, you guys would be so in step, and it was so fucking cute. But one night, you came out dressed as Peter Pan, and they were Wendy and Michael. Mm-hmm. The other two girls were Wendy and Michael, and you did a number.
And we had twins there.
Yeah.
And,
oh, God.
And we had a teddy bear and everything.
It was so fucking great. And then Kevin Aviance goes to the crowd, like motions for them to lift up their hands, and you fucking got on the hands of all the mean, tired faggots at Roxy, and you flew around the Roxy on a sea of faggot hands. And now, I'm going to tell you, that was motherfucking magical.
That was not planned at all. That was all spot. That was all, like, just happened. First of all, I hated doing it from the get-go. They were like, you know, they were doing, because we had to do themes. So even though we were performing there, we were still, like, I'm going to just call it, like, the way that, you know, people call me the Uncle Tom drag queen girl, okay? and that's fine, because Uncle Tom gets paid.
Showed up.
And being, you know, at Roxy, it's the creme de la creme of the creme de la creme of Saturday nights. You know
right.
what I mean? And those that aren't even though it's very multicultural, multiracial, whatever the case be, Roxy, it's just white cream puff girl.
Sure is. Yeah.
So getting to do a gig like that, knowing, you know, girls get jealous, they get upset, and they all of a sudden put a name on it, because, you know, when you're a black girl, you get categorized, so they'll call me Uncle Tom Drag Queen, so it's okay. So Uncle Tom gets up there, and they say, girl, you're going to do Peter Pan this weekend. I said, Peter motherfucking Pan, girl? So I'm thinking Michael Jackson. I said, fierce, girl, I'm going to go Michael Jackson, Peter Pan, I'm going to turn it out. And they were like, no, girl, you're doing Peter Pan. I said, you mean green outfit with green hat with green shoes? They said, velvet, girl. I mean, what do you call that stuff? Not velvet.
Felt.
Yeah. They said felt. I said, you're kidding me. They said, no, you are. I said, well, girl, somebody better call Miss Trace, Philip Tracy up and get that hat going. And those green felt shoes are not going to be flat. Get over that. And I guess I'll have to wear that little green outfit. But I don't want to see anything. Just give it to me the day of the performance. It's it. Da, da, da. So the girls wore nightgowns. Da, da, da. And then we had these two little boys from Canada that were dancing with us at the time. And I didn't think it was going to happen. And being a cultural faggot from around the world and things, I've seen Peter Pan many a time. Plus, read the book. It's in the Walt Disney version. And Mary Martin. And da, 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 and Sandy Duncan. And Michael Jackson. So I was like, I could do Peter Pan. Let's just do Peter Pan from my memory, you know? So, you know, never really did anything, you know, because they're not going to play the soundtrack.
No, they still played Cunty Cow's hits.
Yeah, it's all Victor's songs and everything. So I'm out there and we're just like, yeah. So we're having fun, right? Uh-huh. And it needed to go somewhere. It wasn't going anywhere. People were living. To Caesar, it turned that hat out. The hat was gorgeous. The little felt shoes were gorgeous. I was really kind of feeling it. And I was like, girl, I'm not flying, girl. But I was flying. You know what I mean? I was flying, and whether they know that or not, I was flying lovely. And because sometimes you had to at that party.
You
it was
sure
just
do.
Like, you know, when you're coming out and you're doing the same old numbers and jumping around and doing the same kicks and everything, you got to believe in something, you know.
And so, believe in magic.
So they, I said, girls, you know, we're going to fly. So get ready. They're like, we're going to do what, girl? They said, you going to fly, bitch. I'm not flying. I said, girl, this thing, I have my hair on, this thing, I can't be bothered. Because the cunties always gave me drama. They always told me no, and that's the way it is. And they just watched me act like a fool. So I was like, okay, fine, whatever. I'm going to fly. I said, but get ready on the count of three. We're just going to fly. I said, so we're going to get everybody to put their hands up. So this is all happening on stage where we're dancing.
Yeah.
Because we could talk to each other like, kind of like sign language, but it's jigaboo, so it's like a jigaboo drag dance type thing. Because the whole time I'm like, girls, you need to give me a girls, yeah. All right, girl, you guys do this and that. One, two, girl, all right, girl, this and that. What kind of, are you crazy, bitch? But lip syncing the song at the same time. So they're like, I said, 5, 6, 7, 3. So it's like, it's really bad. If anybody would know really what's going on, they would think we all lost our minds. So Naomi would do her ass shake, turn around, ass shake, and then Joseph would do 5, 6, 7, 8, kick every week, girl. And that would be the start of, let's start the drama. So I'm doing the thing. I said, come on, girls, let's go. I said, you're in here, girl. You're in here, girl. Damn, we forgot to get the teddy bear, girl. So I'm going to get the teddy bear. We're like, Jamie. So we dancing there with Jamie. Jamie's like, what, girl, what? Teddy bear, girl. Teddy bear. He brings teddy bear to us. So teddy bear comes flying on like this. We're like, work. And then we're supposed to have a dog. We couldn't find anybody to put a dog. And then all of a sudden, they start to
lift
you know,
up their hands.
They lift up their head, get their hands up. Now, I remember this during my punk days because I'm being very cultured black bitch. You know, some. It was kind of like, what do they call it?
Crowd surfing. Yeah.
Okay. Crowd surfing. Surfing. But you're supposed to dive, right? But they need to hold us up.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, hold up. And let's go, girls. And they're like, I said, go first. They said, you Peter Pan, you go first. I said, and I was like, okay, let's do this. So I go, and I land. I'm like, lies. let's go. And we go through the club, and they are falling for it, and people are falling for it, and they're going to. So we get all the way over. We pass the black girls. We go past the drag queens that are visiting. We go up to like the booths, come back down, and now we're hitting the boys, the men with muscles. Age, old. You know, they're older, you know. They're not like, they're not like 20-something, you know, they're good, you know, because they're always giving like Hedy Simaine right now, so they can't lift anything, right? So these boys are like been muscle, you know, at the gym, yeah, at the gym, at the gym, 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 jerking off at the gym, gym, gym.
19th Street Gym?
Was 19th Street Gym open yet? No, that, no, they were going to David Barton, and they were doing, it's Chelsea, girl. Yeah, I don't
it's
know.
Chelsea.
Girl.
So you get to the white people.
It's definitely pre-Crystal Day, so
right, so they, everyone's in a good mood, not crazy.
Yeah, in a good mood, and no K evolved. So you know, people are just like they're really like energetic, because Victor's turning. That beat's really turning, because I think before that, all that Crystal stuff hit really heavy. Victor was really like, that was when that whole.
That was such a great period for it. Really, the only time I really liked Victor is like it was all vocals. It was a lot of great high energy, and everybody in the club wasn't like
all the Sandy B records. The Sandy B. What's her name? Deborah Cooper records.
Deborah Cooper and like it was like all that Unspeakable Joy and
all that stuff.
That Share the Love
and Shackles
song.
And all that stuff.
All that great stuff. Anyway, you get to the white people,
We get to Muscle Boys.
White Muscle. Okay.
The Muscle Boys. And the Muscle Boys, you know, they just say, "Honey." I was heading over there. I said, "These boys are going to turn me. Girl, don't you know that was where the Red Sea started, honey?" They looked at me like I was crazy. They said, "Bitch, you better go back to that stage."
Oh.
I was like, I'm trying to get across to them. They're like, "Hey." They're like, bitch. We look at you from over there. You stay over there. I'm like, "Okay, turn around." So we turn. I turn around. Turn around. They turn me around, and you know everybody's following the leader. You know they're like coming around, and every time they get to go, the girls are like, "Lies, this thing. Can't fucking turn me. You want to pick up something else?" So fine, we do it. We do it, and we get back the thing, and I jump back on stage, and I'm like, "Ah, yeah, get it." So. The second time around.
Because it happened a bunch of times.
Yeah, well, it happened twice.
Okay.
It happened twice. It's been a long time. The second time around, honey, wasn't so cute. I, being lit as I was, you know, I don't think sometimes. I just think people are just going to be in the program.
Right.
And there's a lot that's happened to me. And I'm used to it. And I have all the battle wounds to show it and all the scars to show it and keloids and all this stuff, you know. I have all of them. I've every last one of them. And I went to go do it, and there were no hands up, and I landed right dead on my face.
Oh, I don't remember that part, but I think my magical Kevin Avion's fairy dust had dripped that away.
Yeah, I landed on my face. I jumped up again.
Yeah,
like, I jumped right back up on the stage. Like
I was probably so high in ecstasy and just like, "I love Kevin Avion." That you could have like, you know, if you had just come to me, I would have like, "I'll carry him, guys."
Yeah, and then the next week, they said, "We should do it again." And Josephine was like, "Honey, you remember the second time you did that, right? You really gonna hit the ground this time. So go ahead and do it. I'm letting you know we have none. We're not part of the show, okay?"
That was quite a speed. That was when I first, like, that period is when I first started seeing you perform. And it was quite a magical Kevin Avion's period, because you would do Roxy on Saturday Night with Victor. Then you would go do Junior right after, right?
Right, Junior.
Well, there's a little drama there, I guess.
Well, I mean, it's not that it's drama.
Because you're not performing at Junior anymore, right?
No, I don't.
Which is a tragedy for me.
It's just a different time and a different era now. And Junior's feeling something different, as I am feeling something different. And the music wasn't taking me where I needed to be. And and I just wasn't feeling a lot of the stuff that was being played. A lot of it was crash, boom, bam. So I was just like, you know, there was no fluidity and there was no flowing. There was no magic that was linking him and I together anymore. It opened doors for me, though. I mean, people that normally would not work with me normally are now working with me now because
stamp of there was something magical when you guys were like when I would originally see like we were talking about it earlier on the show where like sometimes it seemed like there was like some shows where you'd be done with the show but Junior would put on another record that he knew you just couldn't not perform and like there was something about that relationship that was just magical. That's one of the things I wanted to ask you, like where did like you I remember you came to New York, so you were in Miami first, right?
I was in D.C. first.
D.C. first.
Yeah. So actually, I was in Richmond, Virginia first.
You were in Richmond. You're from Richmond, Virginia. Yeah, and then when did you you started in fourth grade? Yeah. Fourth grade with the shows.
And doing drag.
Really?
Yes.
And that must have made high school very difficult.
The high school was just my, it was like punk days. Not really punk, but like, you know, black guy, black queen walking around in punk outfits and like trash vaudeville and
much
know,
like Linda James like, high school
like,
years
like you know Playboy shoes with stripes like trash vaudeville pants on and you know a lot of woolly wear and just trying to like trying to be so like my girlfriends that were like at the time and even though I was really different and being like one of the few black kids with my school I was trying so hard to be as different as possible because I didn't want to come off as a black kid because it was such a like a I don't know. It was just rough, you know. I didn't know how to accept it myself, and unless I went to church and being around other people that were like me and stuff. So you know, in my high school and all my schools and stuff, you know, when you're the class clown or the performing one or the one that's just entertaining everybody all the time, you feel somewhat kind of special because a lot of kids aren't getting that attention, you know. So
I sure do know. So, I think we all in this room probably know exactly how you feel. Okay,
pretty much. Yeah. And so I just you know. And I was my mom's Kiki kid. So my mom had 8 kids. So you know, I was like the artistic one. And leave him alone. He is feeling himself and he's expressing himself. And leave him alone. No one bother him. And then, you know, that was good though. Yeah,
my that's mom, pretty mom, amazing.
She yeah. really like you know she never told me no. So
that's really lucky. Well, so then when did you leave home to go to D.C.?
I left home. My brother came out of the closet. So that's when I left. So it was like 21. I left home.
And then what was your? You were heading to D.C. to do what? Just be a performer? What was your original idea?
I fell in love with this white man because the white man was the only thing that was going to take me out of that Richmond, Virginia, honey. So he took me out of Richmond, Virginia, and took me to D.C. It was just dramatic. And then how it all started. I just started doing weaves, and I started putting. Tracks in my head, and that just started to like it started with one little 3-inch piece that at the end of our relationship I was a full Pocahontas when I was finished.
Wow.
Like parted down the middle, 18 inches, 4 bags of hair.
Wow.
So you know, but it didn't really match. I didn't know how to blend too well, but I was kind of broken off, so was, you know, a lot of bandanas. That's when I met Juan.
That's where you met Mother Juan.
Yeah, I met Juan.
Mother Juan Avianz, the mother of the house.
And I was wearing a lot of hair at the time. I was known for wearing tons and tons of hair. And I invented this new system because I didn't like human hair and I liked synthetic hair. And so I would take these wigs and take them all apart and reweave the wig back into my head.
Wow.
And I would just in big curly wigs like. Big lock, and then I would have to, you know, they would get washed and they get wet and they would dread, and it just became really interesting looking. So, Miss Juan came up to me at the club on Sunday night, which was Black Night at Tracks, and everyone did Thursday. Thursday was the alternative, and then there was Black Night on Sunday. And Sunday, Black was like all the holidays, and this is where all the kids would run away, and you know, Robert and all these kids that I used to love to watch Runway all the time, Marquis and all these kids, they're like my forefather queens. They're amazing. And I used to want to be like them so bad. And they all had long hair and their own hair too. They all had long hair, but I had a wig, so they used to make fun of me a little bit, but it was okay. And then they used to do Runway and stuff. They were tall, thin, beautiful, gorgeous queens, black queens, and then they all became trannies.
Right. Oh, wow.
Like at the age of like 40.
Damn, and, yo. That's a tough switch.
Ooh, girl.
Oof. You took a minute to switch with that.
I was like, beast. Anyway, so after that all happened, I met Juan. And Juan was like, oh, you have something special. Come hang out with us. Da, da, da. And this is like my time when I was ahead of doing hair at the time. I had a sister that was like my best friend, Michelle, and we would smoke these things called cigarettes. I mean, this is a lot of graphic story, children, but this is the real story, okay?
This is the shit I've been dying to hear.
This is real stories. And then I was smoking these little cigarettes, and they were kind of like, you know, energetic and whatever. Oh, God, she just took me back. I'm gagging right now. So she wanted to really break it down. I think, oh, that's crack! I can't even throw it on crack, because I'm like a Virginia country girl. I was from Herrera County.
What are these interesting cigarettes I'm smoking?
I mean, Richmond University is in my backyard. I could not be bothered in this thing, but I got bothered.
Wow. And, you and Oprah, too.
And it
early
was like,
crack try.
Yeah, but after like 4 months of doing that, I lost it all. And that was real turn. And then I met Jean-Philippe Aviance.
Uh-huh.
And Jean-Philippe, and they were like, girl, you know what you feel? And I was just doing, like, my drag was, like, very Diana Ross, very, you know, I was doing a little entertaining, but more, like, hosting now, but I wasn't really performing yet.
And when did it transfer from, like, just doing looks to, like, when was your first, like, show where you were, like...
That was in D.C.
That was in D.C.
Yeah, I used to have a party called the Big Wig Party, and then it turned into my own party called Kindergarten with Jean-Philippe and Paul, so rest in peace, and this other girl, Dee Dee, this big fat bitch. And we had this party called Kindergarten where we used to like bring people down from New York and everything. And
you brought Pepper LaBeija and Dorian Corey down once,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we had an Aviance. We had our first Aviance ball with a release of Paris is Burning there, and I hosted it for BET, actually.
Wow.
And we had Pepper LaBeija. I met Pepper LaBeija and Dorian Corey. And they came, and actually they died. Dorian Corey died 3 weeks later.
So lucky to have gotten to meet them. Kids, like I said, check the website. Yeah. If you don't know who we're talking about, check queenmother.com.
Yeah, okay. Dorian Corey was like phenomenal. Pepper LaBeija was fierce, but the one I really got off on was Dorian Corey, because she was this yellow belly tap sucker woman, and she was this like she had a really hard face, but yet the bitch could sew like a banshee, and the bugle beads with the feathers and she was just, oh, she was so glamorous beyond belief, you know. And they were like, they were really fucked up when we met them and everything.
Really?
Oh, they were mess. They were like a mess. They were like, rawr, rawr, rawr.
I wish that was there.
It was amazing. And then I remember BET being, because BET was still in DC. They just started.
Right.
And
did you see Donnie Simpson there?
No, but they sent some people like, who was the girl that was on that show?
I only remember Donnie Simpson. I was the only whitey in my high school in Egypt who would get the people to tape BET for them, and I'd borrow the tape from the black girls. I was such a wiener. Can I borrow your BET tape, you guys?
It's me, Johnny McGovern.
It's me, Johnny McGovern. I'm a white guy who likes R&B. I'm weird.
So that was the okay. You know.
That was when you started off at that party.
Yeah.
And then when did you move to Miami? And what was the transition from there to Miami then to New York?
I got ready. I was ready for it. I was heard about the gay Mecca and all the people that came back from Miami, and they said all the cafes were open, da da da. It's on the beach. You have to go.
So and that was like when South Beach was like really.
Actually, it was the end of South Beach. When I got there, it was the end. So it was like 90. It was like 91, 92 when I got there.
Okay.
And no. That's wrong. No, it was 90 when I got 90. There. I left in 92 and I came to New York.
That was like where like all the things that are trailing off now about that came from that period when it was super hot.
Right.
Even though they're still doing South Beach, it's not like that, because I visited
South Beach is hoochie woman now.
It's not.
It's hoochie.
It's not glamorous as like I imagined.
Fort
Lauderdale's
glamorous though.
What?
Fort Lauderdale's glamorous now.
Well. Well, it sounded like it was glamorous. You met Jeff and Daniel of Man of the Arts there.
I met Jeff and Daniel and Kitty Meow, and Kitty Meow actually took me in. And actually, I met Justo Artigas from Dolce & Gabbana. That's where I met Justo. Justo was a friend of mine from D.C. because I won Club Kid of the World.
Really? In D.C.?
In D.C. I won for D.C.
Holy
and then
moly.
I won Club Kid of the World against all the club kids all around the world.
Here, do they still do that?
Club Kid of the World? They did it once. It was called Style
God.
It was the Style Summit. And Lee Bowery actually gave me the...
Oh, my God. Kevin Aviance. Yeah, the glamour and excitement of the jet set world of Kevin Aviance.
Then the second night was the judging night. And that's when I came. I was the Klingon model, Imana.
Like a glamorous Star Trek Klingon.
Yeah, total Klingon like model. And I remember they had the outlaw party in the subway, and the cops came, and they had fucking hose, and they fucking chased everybody out like rats.
The outlaw parties were where Michael Alec would have these parties like in public places, and you just would take it over, right?
Right. It's like the Twin Donuts or the Burger King or whatever.
You just take it over and start a party in any crazy place like that.
So they took over the subway at Times Square. No, at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, my God.
And down in the, like, the depths of it. Like 2,000 or 3,000 people down there, like carrying on liquor, da, da, da. And then all of a sudden the cops came down there with hose.
Oh my God.
And they started spraying. Queens went flying out of anywhere. We're not talking about manhole covers, into the street, running towards limelight.
Wow.
In the street with the hose of water. So, you know, everyone's running. This is, you know, I'm wearing six. You know, this is when I was wearing 6-inch heels. So I'm like running down the street. And the cops are with the cop. It was hot. It was amazing.
That's quite a scene.
It was amazing. So like they
photographed
the competition that night. And so when it came up to wallpaper, I don't even know if you knew who wallpaper was. Wallpaper was my king, and then became the queen. And, you know, they said, so, Kevin Adams, is there anything you want to say to us? I was like, they were like this.
Keeping it Klingon.
No, you didn't just speak Klingon, bitch. Kevin Adams is just waving the finger, giving a look that I wish you could see.
They were like,
in slow motion.
It was really, really genius. Like, you know, but it was all just like running. You know what I mean? We were just like, you know, it was so much fun. Like everything was just so much fun back then.
That's great.
I wasn't even living here yet at all. So.
And then when did you? Okay, so you moved here after having some success in Miami and in DC. Mm-hmm. And then when did it start? Like when did you start to? Especially, specifically, like in like sort of doing the shows where you were what you sort of, you know, sort of now evolved from, but like where you were in the bald head.
Well, they hated me when I first moved to New York.
And what was that like?
That was really rough because you have to understand, so New York is the epitome of glamour here, and everybody was so glamorous. Everybody was so beautiful. Carlina, Candace, even the big fat bitches, they were like press, and they were women, and they were like, they were personalities. They weren't just club kids. They were like, they were actual people who had personalities. And they were like, they could talk like that. They could be that person. And in Miami, we were all, it's kind of clowny. You know what I mean? Even though I got schooling there and everything, it was just that I wasn't too toned down to be daylight yet. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I remember going to a major audition for this like tequila thing, and they called us all for, and they said, "Can you go?" So I go, 12 wigs, coat, feathers, I walk in, everybody's in jeans. Tank tops.
Oh, ouch.
Their books. High heel pumps. And they all go like this.
Oh, that's fucking rough.
Ooh, girl. That's a lot of work, girl. They're like loud.
Damn.
I'm like, damn. I'm like, oh, no. I said, well, you know what? I'm going to sit down. Right when I sit down, they said, Kevin Aviance, and your drag name is what? I said, Kevin Aviance. No, your girl name. Kevin Aviance. Well, how's that going to work? I said, it does work.
So then it started to evolve, and you started to make choices on how you wanted to look.
Yeah,
and be
Girlina
perceived.
Was the first one to hire me here, and then I was hanging. Cesar Galindo was a really, really dear friend of mine, and he was like the one that was, really like told me to get rid of the wigs and get rid of everything, and you know the tits, and stop tucking, and all that stuff, and just because I was becoming his muse at the time, and so you know hanging out at his house and stuff, he would always test these things on me or test the look on me or whatever, and then it became really we just became obsessed with it, and to the point that he couldn't really make the stuff for
anybody else
the
except for you.
Stuff, yeah.
Because you guys really did create, like, you know, you really created, like, a pop icon type of look and thing that was very much you that I've seen, like, now go around the world and lots of different queens are doing it. But, like, that really came from you. Now, when you first started, like, what was the big break here? Was it Junior that was the big break?
Madonna.
Yeah. And you were in the secret
because
video.
I was doing Junior's birthday party anyway, and that was a big deal.
Was the story true that you would, like, that you, for Junior, you just started, like, being in the middle of the dance floor and performing, and eventually somebody put the light on and they started paying attention?
No, I was on the side of the club, and I was underneath the there was a way to the lounge, and there was a light here because they didn't want too much lights in the club that were all over. It was like pin lights, and I was standing underneath the pin light, and you know they had this huge beginning of The Pressure playing, and
The Pressure by Sounds of Blackness, The Pressure,
and this is when Junior had came back to go work at Sound Factory because his Freaky Knuckles had taken over for a while, and David Tobino was playing for a little bit, and then Junior came back and they started The Pressure, and then he breaks down, and just that light was on, and I just started to perform. And after that performance was over, I didn't know I was really performing at the time, and then everybody was watching.
Right.
Junior had come out of the booth and gave me the flowers. And wow. That was the scandal. Because he did, no one could go up in the booth, and he definitely was never coming out of that booth.
Right.
And so for him to come out of the booth to give me flowers, wow. I was like, wow, this is
that is much. Something.
And so that's when the kids were like, oh, okay. Well, she, you know, they got a kudos. And then it started circulating. 2 weeks later, I was I slept with this boy that I met at Crowbar, and Crowbar was on the East Village. And the guy called me the next day and said, "Listen, I'm selling this gig. I need for you to. They need a drag queen for this video." I said, "Okay." He said, "You need to go and talk to this casting director, and you pretty much got it. You just have to go because this big person who was supposed to do it pulled out of it." I didn't know who it was for, so I got the part. And then they called me that morning, told me where to meet everybody at that morning. And I said, "Well, by the way, who's it for?" They're like, "I guess we could tell you. It's Madonna's new video." And I was like, "What?" But I couldn't tell anybody. And we shot it in Harlem. And I've been there all day. It was like 4:30 in the morning, whatever. And I'm over it. I'm sitting in a chair like this. I was gagging. I was like, "They're not doing me, you know." And then finally said, "Okay, we're ready for you." And this is after that whole, Aerosmith at her. We're on the award show. And he goes something about his finger. Or something about Madonna. So she had the finger waves in Versace.
Oh, yeah.
And so she goes, she stayed like really like lady, and she was a real lady, that whole thing, which she normally wasn't. But she was like, changed her attitude or something. And then and they were like, "Oh, Madonna wants to talk to you." I said, "Oh, no, girl.
I'll just wait from here.
I'll wait for the black bean soup, girl." He said, "Madonna wants to see you now." I said, "God." I get up there and she's like, "So," she goes, "Wardrobe, where's wardrobe?" And I'm like,
oh shit.
My God. I said, "So, Madonna, you were really great last night." I said, "You really like kept your shit together. You were like really fierce last
night. On the MTV Awards or something?"
As you were like such a lady, she was just like, "Thanks. Where's wardrobe?" And so the girl that was doing wardrobe at the time, this fat girl, you know,
the one in the movie, right. In Truth or Dare,
right? Exactly the same one. She comes. She says, "Yeah, what's up?" She said, "What's with his tits?" I go, "Oh no."
She goes, God.
"He looks like a hooker. He needs to be a call girl." Okay.
All right.
He's a lot classier. He's more of a call girl. Change the tits. Lower them and do it. We don't have a bra for them. Well, then make one.
That's nice to be Madonna.
And so
she's all business.
They made a bra right then and there. I had to stand there while they could put the bra. I put the bra on me. Meanwhile, back at the band, she's got all these gorgeous Puerto Rican boys around her, and they're just like this, like this. I'm just like. I'm putting on a bra for Madonna right now. This is not cute. And, you know, and then after she said, "That's much better." She said, "Thanks." She said, "Thanks a lot." She said, "Thanks for being in the video." And I said, "Thanks." And that was it for that. So,
wow, that's still a great story.
But then we couldn't even do anything because we couldn't talk about it because, you know, you could end up on the cutting room floor. So it's like, we didn't know what was going
to
happen.
You had to wait.
Nobody knew. I did it all until they actually aired it. And then it was like, oh my God.
The that next was like dropping day, the bomb.
The next day. Bars, dun, 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 everyone's calling.
Oh.
And I was doing $50 gigs, girl. I was
That's glamorous.
It was really fierce. It was really
that is the best to have that bomb like that secretly drop, and then everybody must
Girlina
have
was
shit.
The only one working like seven nights a week. And then I was now working like four. It was really hot. I was like, work.
Oh, that is glamorous. I want to ask you a little bit about your process in writing stuff and also in performing, like especially when you would perform with like Junior or Victor. Now, I always wanted to know. Now, when you're doing a show like that, like the Junior songs, do they tell you what they're going to give you first?
Nothing's planned at all.
So they're all like songs that they have to just guess that you know, or they know that they know you like.
You know, when you work with somebody like that all the time, you build you get the love for the music because there's new songs coming out and there's new mixes and everything.
Right.
So he's just I had a real deep love for his music.
Yeah, for Junior
and his music and the remixes and everything. So I would learn all the songs, and it was easy for me to learn because I didn't really have to learn the words. I learned it all phonetically, so it was like sounds and how the attitude of the song was majorly. And a lot of these songs that were done were already, they were taking songs from radio stations.
Right, like that was like such a great period in that time when the Junior would redo top 40 hits.
Right.
But into something you've never heard before.
Right. And then after that, and then all the classics I knew were just from growing up. So it was just like, it was just a mishmash of other things. And then the drama the drama was just me cutting up, you know.
Yeah, that was there was some magical moments.
And Caesar was a major, you know.
You had an amazing team of people that really were there, like the Cunties with you and Caesar and Jeff and Denio.
My ex-boyfriend Robert Grant.
There's a lot of really magical things happening there. Now we got a little explanation earlier from Sophia Lamar about we were saying like we want to know like when Kevin Obvious is writing Cunty, which I think is maybe the song with the fewest words but the best lyrics ever. Sophia Lamar gave us this explanation. Can you play it?
It's because it's like the queens when they take hormone, they always like, oh, I'm feeling like an orchid. Oh, I'm feeling like a lily. How you feel? And you know, in Miami, the queen say, how you feel? I say, oh, like a bag of cunt.
Feeling like an orchid. Some of the best lyrics ever.
It's extremely expressive.
It really is. We went to Great Adventure one day, and we were playing all your songs on the CD, and then we'd be going over the top of the roller coaster, and we'd all be like, feeling like an orchid.
Oh, my God. It's too much.
It's the truth, Kevin Obvious. So what was that session like, and how did that song come about?
Steve Travolta played a big part of that. Mm-hmm. Steve Travolta was, he knew the guy, a gentleman named Jarrell Black. He was known for doing a lot of bitch tracks. He worked at Vinyl Mania, and he had a song with Franklin Fuentes early before my song, and Jack and Jill, I think, was out. Mm-hmm. And so we go in there, and I walk in, and, you know, There's chicken cooking, and I knew I was in a comfortable place because I love chicken. Fried chicken. He served grape soda.
Well, we want to talk about that later.
Yes.
He served grape soda. Now, I knew I was real comfortable, so I was really in a comfortable place. So after, you know, eating and drinking, and eating and drinking and drinking, I says, oh, girl, why are we here? He said, well, I want to play some beats for you. I said, well, play the beats. And he plays the beats, and I was like, dun, dun. I said, woo, girl. He said, I really want this really cunty. I said, well, that's what we're going to call the song, girl, cunty. And now, I didn't really know what it meant, but I could feel what it meant. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He said, so what does cunty mean to you? I said, I don't know. He said, you know, like what? Was it when you feel cunty? I said, like blooming? He said, yeah. I said, so like a lily. Yeah, like a daisy. Feeling like a rose. Feeling like an orchid. He goes, what did you just say, bitch? And I said, I don't know. He goes, come on, what did you just say? Feel like a what? I said, daisy, a lily. Feel like a daisy, feeling like a rose, feeling like an orchid. An orchid? Like over? I said, no, like an orchid. This is no other feeling but the feeling like an orchid, girl. You fucked the over thing. This an orchid, girl. Come on. An orchid, this thing. She says, oh my God. And then we just started cutting up. He says, I need more attitude. And so I said, okay, girl. I don't know if I did extracurricular activities. I can't remember any of that. I can't remember. All I know is that it was just like really intense. And within a couple of weeks, I had the tracks back. I had a cassette. I got back, and then I played it for my boyfriend, Robert Grant, and he was like, "Yo, this is some shit." I said, "Okay." Then it got signed to Strictly Rhythm, and it was Rageous featuring Kevin Amiens, and Junior had the record for like 5 weeks.
Uh huh.
And now we're at Tunnel, and the song was already out with the Underground Kids.
Right.
Already. Underground, like, you know, Onyx and all those children. They already had the record. Right. But they were like, you know, we didn't want to hear the record because this was the record. And Miss Junior wasn't pumping her yet, and the kids were very much sitting on the dance, sitting in the backs and in the corners and the crest, you know, waiting for the song to be played because that was the next big song.
Right.
And second week went by, third week went by, fourth week went by, fifth week went by, and I walked out. I'm walking out. As I'm walking out of Tunnel, dun, dun! Cunty, cunty, dun, dun! I said, that bitch is too fucking much. Girl, I clicked my heels 3 times and I got back. I walked back to that dance floor and the kids started coming out of those fucking walls and putting their outfits on, fixing their faces.
Oh.
And for the next hour, Cunty was like literally just coming out of every pussy and it was unreal. This is way before, you know, people downloading and stuff like that, but I remember this song getting around so fucking fast with all the kids because it was really sealing an era.
That sealed the era, that song. That really is a magical song. I have like 9,000 mixes of it. I always download them. So what's next? We're going to play. Actually, let's play this right now because we're going to get, for you kids, you're so lucky. It's really my favorite song of the moment. I think my favorite Kevin Avion song. It's your
classic.
New song. You want to intro your new song for me, Kevin Avion?
Yeah, Strut is a song that was... I'm really happy about it because this is like the first song that I did a lot of writing and stuff and co-writing and grew up and did a lot of, did my part with other songs, but this song I quit the business, you know, I was sick and tired of it. I was sick and tired of things that were going on around me and I pretty much was tired of the business and I needed to do a change because I was not feeling any more of being produced and being told what to do because
last album, you weren't really very happy with.
I was really happy with that because they got it out of me.
Right.
But I wished I had stayed more to what I really wanted it to be because it was really about my growth. It was really about me doing these songs that were supposed to be the big number one records and they really never got to be because money ran out or whatever the case may be. So, you know,
dance music ain't easy.
It was just like a letdown for me. And so, you know, when you go through your artist depression after you put something out, it's not cute. You know, people have no idea what you go through after you put something out, such a big piece of work, and it's your second piece, and then, you know, I did well on it, you know, I had 2 number 1s off of it, but the fact of the matter is, it's like, you know, it's, and I'm traveling and everything, it's the satisfaction was not, it was not adding up correctly, things weren't, you know, right, and then they shelved the record, and, you know, after going through all that, and still working, the whole time I'm working, that's the beautiful thing about my career is that I'm working, and even if it's I'm riding high or riding low, whatever it could be, I'll still go do a $20 gig. I really don't give a fuck because you got to realize something that you can't. You can look at a gift of horse in the mouth, and you can be living. You may be living for a full shine of diamonds and glory, but you got to look at some buck teeth every now and then, girl, and be able to be like, you know, that's the real me, girl. And you know, without all that, I would be dead or in jail. So if I stop. If I stop to say, you know, you can be picky about your gigs and stuff, but you can't be too choosy and you can't be too fierce about it.
You can't stop creating evolving.
You have to evolve. If you don't evolve, you end up dead.
And same thing, like, you know, I was doing all the gay pimp stuff for 2 years off that one album. And then, like, you know, there comes a point where you're like, okay, I've said that.
Right.
Like, and I'm still saying stuff like that, but you need to take time to, like, refigure out where you're going and what's your next thing to say. Because you don't want to be saying the same shit over and over. Still you, so it's going to be similar.
Right.
And it's gonna still be your shit.
Right.
But you do need to take that time to, like, do that, or else you just end up, then you're that guy doing that same record as always.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
It's like.
And a lot of, you know, I don't regret any of the bad things that went on, and I don't regret all the growing and all the things that I put myself through and the things that I caused and everything for myself or for my group or whatever the case may be. But I standing here right now and knowing that I went through all that and knowing that this is a dream from a little boy, and you know that little boy's dream has still not been fulfilled the way it needs to be fulfilled. And as far as I'm concerned, as long as I can hear that little boy, you know, wanting to be that star, I remember that so much, and I remember that feeling. And so, you know, when I you know, like performing with you guys last week or 2 weeks ago, it brought back that feeling. And a lot of performers don't bring that feeling. I've been around the world. I've done things. I performed with a lot of great, huge entertainers. And that moment the other night was so real and so spectacular that it gagged me to the point that I was like, okay, I've not felt that in so long. That accolade, that feeling, because you know the girls are performing. I'm back behind that curtain the whole time, and you know that thing falls. I mean, I'm like trying to do anything to keep myself like this attitude where I'm just like just.
Unbothered.
Unbothered, taking in the accolade, but really I was gagging. Like, Jack, I had to run to the bathroom.
It was a magical moment, it that really show. Was. When the curtain fell.
You should give yourself a round of applause.
Oh,
that
thank mean, you.
That's like, you know, that's, you know, they can say whatever they want, and they can try to downplay, because I've heard downplay of stuff already about mm-hmm. the thing, and the fact of the matter is yeah. that it was done all because of a serve, and it's a good thing, and it, right. and it was done to let you have it,
yeah.
and to make you gag, and if you're gagging on it, then we've done our job.
Totally. That's what that whole spirit series
is
about.
Not everything is sweet, and not everything's nice, and not everybody's going to have a good time. And sometimes you're going to have to gag children and be a little bit in your face about things. That's what they don't seem to understand about our house and with the Avianz girls. Let me tell you something. I think we're the most beautiful, busted girls in the world.
I feel you.
Do you know what I mean? We are some freaky looking motherfuckers, honey. I mean, really, like, if you really, like, there's some beautiful people in New York and beautiful, gorgeous people. But somehow, this energy, these girls and me and
we. It's the misfits.
It's total misfits. And it's totally like, you know, these toys that just got rejected and that they're letting you know that, though, that's a flaw, honey, and that's going to get on the cover, bitch, you know? And that's good. It's amazing how. It's just amazing. It amazes me how it all transcends to this whole individuality, and this is real homosexuality for me. This is what gay means to me. Gay does not mean to me like what this rainbow flag and all. That's what gay means to me. You know, mm-hmm. that emotion, that feeling. That's what I'm so proud of being like.
Feeling.
Yeah, being like a queen, lily. You know, and it keeps you young.
Kevin Avianz, you are still my hero and my number one person. We're going to hear your song right now. Thank you for being here. This is really like everything that I wanted, we really got, because I'm just in heaven. I love you, Kevin Avianz.
I cry every time too. Kevin Avianz tells me a story.
Kevin Avianz! We got it. Now here's Kevin Avianz's hot new single, my favorite song, Strut.
Strut my way to the city.